has to be somewhere. The last time I had it was in the house. Are you sure you haven't seen it?
I'm afraid not, Mum.
I'll just check down here.
It won't be down there, Mum.
But we've looked everywhere else.
Ah, but not every when else.
Did you hear something?
No, nothing.
There it was again. Surely you heard that.
Oh, that must have been the Badgermingo, Mum.
No, the Badgermingo is upstairs. That came from the cellar. Oh, this door isn't usually locked. Latimer, do the honours, would you?
I wouldn't advise it, Mum.
Latimer? Oh! Hello, darling. I don't suppose you've seen...
Em! I'm so glad to see you. It's been horrible.
But I thought you liked Dragon Age.
I finished that months ago. The door was locked. I missed my own book launch and the Grim Gathering and EasterCon.
Oh, but Latimer told me that... Latimer?
I'll make some tea, Mum.
Don't worry about a thing, darling. This is exactly why I have a time machine. I haven't missed an appointment since 1863. But, darling...
Yes?
We're going to have to do something about that beard. Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't just discovered that your butler has locked away your husband since Christmas. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. I've decided to take tea at home today. I hope it wasn't too hard for you to reach the front door. I told Latimer to lock away the various creatures we were given for Christmas, and I trust he lowered the drawbridge so you could cross the lava moat, judging by how delightfully unsinged you all look.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mum, but your husband has just been cleaned.
Again? But we tidied him up before we used the time machine to take him to all his author events.
I'm afraid there was an incident, Mum, involving custard, sharks, and a rather irritated garden gnome. Best not to ask, Mum. I can assure you, he is presentable now.
Splendid. Show him in, Latimer.
But, Mum, you haven't seen his calling card.
He's my husband, Latimer. I know who he is.
But it wouldn't be proper.
Oh, very well, then. Let's see his calling card.
He didn't have one. However, when pressed, he doodled one on the back of a napkin. Will that suffice?
Yes. Oh, I think that is one of his signature flying snail doodles. Peter Newman, writer, runner, part-time adult. Oh, I think there's something else written inside the napkin fold. Please don't leave me alone with the butler.
How rude.
Well, show him in, Latimer. For those of you who don't know, Peter Newman is the author of The Vagrant, his debut novel published by Harper Voyager. When he's not writing books, he is a trainer and firewalking instructor and has been nominated for a Hugo Award 2 years running for his contributions to the Tea and Jeopardy podcast. He also happens to be my husband.
The husband, Mum.
Hello, darling. Do come and sit down. How are you?
Much better now, thanks.
Would you like to have a nice cup of tea?
Oh, I would, yeah.
And how do you take your tea?
Milk and 2 sugars.
2 sugars?
I know, I like to live on the edge.
And would you like some Bakewell tart? I know it's one of your favourites.
Always.
So are you feeling rested?
Oh, I feel so much better.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm so sorry. You must have thought that I'd just, like, abandoned you or something, but I had no idea. I thought you were playing Dragon Age.
Well, I was playing Dragon Age at first, for the first, I don't know, couple of days, I suppose. I did think a few things, if I'm honest, which probably can't be repeated here.
No.
But I take it all back in my mind now.
Good.
It's all good.
Good. So, Dragon Age Inquisition, then, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I think it's marvellous. So I have lots of thoughts about Dragon Age Inquisition. I think it is, for those who haven't played it, it's essentially like Skyrim with story. Mm-hmm. It's got
really good voice acting. It looks the business. It's lots of fun to play. I think in terms of representation, it is streets ahead of its time in lots of different ways.
And it has romance.
It does have romance. It does. And I love Cassandra.
I love Cassandra too. She's just the best. I was really upset that I couldn't romance her.
Yeah. And I think that's also interesting, you know, characters with their own preferences that might reject your player character. No, Cassandra's just brilliant.
I love the fact with Cassandra as well is that she is really kick-ass hard. And obviously that does kind of irritate me in kinds of, oh, all strong female protagonists need to be kick-ass hard, but not. But she's really quite nuanced, actually, and she is romantic, and you don't expect her to be romantic, and it's so lovely when that comes out.
Yeah.
And that she's so awkward as well.
I think that level of nuance is something which you just don't get in a lot of games.
No.
That's really nice to see. And also her voice. I could listen to her all day.
Yeah, she has got a lovely voice. Are you playing any other games now, or have you just been too upset?
There was a lot of weeping. Which, you know, does make it hard. It's hard to see the screen through the tears. That's the thing.
Oh, darling, I feel terrible.
But I've sort of dabbled since Dragon Age in odd games here and there. So I've played Transistor, which I really liked. So there's a game which I wish I could remember the name of it now. But it's a game we looked at recently where everything is white.
Oh, yeah.
It's something about a swan.
Oh, The Unfinished Swan.
That's the fellow, The Unfinished Swan. And so everything is white, and you have you can shoot little bits of paint, and you effectively sketch out the world around you as you go. And it was such a clever little mechanic, but I loved it.
It was a very clever mechanic. And interesting that if you over-splatter something, it's just so completely black that you can't see anything as much as when it's completely white.
Yeah, there's a sort of art to it, isn't there? No pun intended. And the other thing I liked recently is Race the Sun, which is just a very simple, almost kind of a wipeout-y kind of feeling game where it's just really fast.
But that's so stressful.
It is stressful.
It's really stressful. That is a really good getting together with your mates and getting drunk game.
But no, fundamentally, there just isn't enough BioWare role-playing games on the market, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, you are a bit of a BioWare boy, aren't you?
I am a BioWare boy. I love you, BioWare.
I remember when ages ago, oh my God, this must be years ago, I came downstairs and said that someone from BioWare was following me on Twitter, and you were just so excited.
I was.
You were more excited than when I said that David Hasselhoff was following me, and you were very excited about that.
Yeah. Well.
And then, of course, I explained that he wasn't following me because of me, because he follows thousands and thousands and thousands of people. But
I remember getting quite excited when Roland Rat followed me. So
no, Roland Rat was following me.
Yeah, Roland Rat follows me.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know.
He was,
I've made it.
There's, dead or something.
This is Roland Rat can't die.
Can he not die?
He's like Roland Rat the Ever-Living or something.
That reminds me of something that I think we need to talk about, which is your broken jukebox.
Okay.
Brain.
See, this is one of these things. You know, being interviewed is all very well, but when you're interviewed by your wife, who knows all your embarrassing secrets, it's much harder.
I'm not interviewing you, darling. We're having tea together.
Well, that's true.
In the company of good friends.
And they are wonderful. It's a bit intimidating how some of them lurk in the shadows, but they're generally all wonderful.
No. You only have to worry about... No. Actually, you don't have to worry about a thing now, darling. Not a thing.
I have been worrying about quite a few things. Like, the house seems different than I remember it.
Oh, yes. We've been adding a few features. But let's go back to your jukebox brain.
See, now... What? What?
Well, I always wanted a moat. You know that. And it wasn't my fault that lava was put into the moat. That was a misunderstanding between myself and Latimer. I have no idea where Latimer is.
Yeah. I don't know where he is either. That makes me worried. But he's not... No, he's not behind me.
No, he's not. Fine. He's not. I'll tell you. It's okay.
And, you know, actually, while we're on that subject, where did Latimer even come from anyway? How do we well, afford a butler?
No, I don't worry. It's an arrangement. He seems very happy to just be my butler.
I mean, although that's really strange.
I know.
You know, I don't think you should trust people who are just happy to hang out in your house.
I normally wouldn't,
reason.
But he's actually really useful. He makes an amazing cup of tea. It's all to do with this magic teapot thing that we found. And I'll fill you in another
time. Was that the thing you brought back from that holiday you went on?
Yes, the holiday, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, your jukebox brain.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping you'd forgotten about that.
your minuscule attention span.
So, oh, I love you too.
I love you too, honey bunny. So your jukebox brain.
Yes.
I'm going to keep saying that until we talk about it.
do you want me to tell people about my jukebox brain?
Do you want me to not tell people?
No, I'm happy to. So essentially what happens is when people say things, my brain, normally within about one step, can relate it to some kind of song or piece of music, which then plays in my head.
Yeah. And this is actually a really serious virus, because it's either a virus or conditioning, but most of the things that come out of your jukebox for certain triggers, I now can sing or predict. And it's kind of a weird thing being in your world.
Music world.
Yeah. So obviously we had to go back in time and go to your launches and all that sort of thing. So
that was really convenient, having that time machine, because I just thought I was ruined. I thought everyone, you know, who doesn't turn up to their own launch, for goodness sake?
No, it was all put right.
That is a timeline I do not want to go and visit.
So I was going to ask how it feels now to have a book out there after all of your hard work for so many years.
Well, it is both wonderful and terrifying, I think, all at once. It feels, I mean, obviously the book is now out, and it feels like the equivalent of crowd surfing, that, you know, it's been thrown out there and it will either sail majestically across to the kind of the back of the room and beyond, or it will just sort of fall with a thump and then be forgotten about and trampled on.
Mm.
And all of these things are, you know, completely out of my hands now. So, yes, that feeling of powerlessness is terrifying. But on the flip side, people online have generally been pretty wonderful.
Yeah.
And every time, you know, I get a nice tweet or a good review comes in or anything like that, really, it's just you know, I'm float around for the rest of the day.
You do, so. Almost literally.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing that when you're writing a book that you hope will be published, you have all of the control over the world, over every single thing that happens. And then when you start to try and get published, it's like this really long lesson and journey into how to give up all of the control that you might possibly want, be it from when somebody will reply to a query through to what the cover will be like, through to how people will receive the book and how they'll review it. How do you cope with that loss of control?
Badly. I think that there's also, you know, every experience is different for different writers. And I was quite lucky from the point of view of things like the cover and with the edits and that kind of business, that I did feel included and that there were discussions taking place rather than just things being handed down in a kind of that's it. So I always felt like I was part of the process rather than a bystander to that process. However, now the book is actually out, that does feel much more difficult. And yeah, the waiting side of things is awful.
Oh my God, the waiting.
Oh, the waiting.
The waiting.
Oh, I hate the waiting.
Yeah, the waiting. Nobody said either, you know, when I was trying to get published, nobody said that most of my professional life then would just be waiting.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of joking recently that there should be a waiting workshop at conventions just for, you know, just to prepare you for what that's like. And because obviously when you go out on submission, there's lots of waiting.
Mm.
And all of that. But actually, that just continues in different ways.
Yeah, and you think that it's going to finish. You think, oh, well, once I get picked up, then, you know, surely I'll be writing books all the time and it will be this flurry of activity. But it really isn't. And it's so strange. And of course, also as you're, well, you've gone straight in with Harper Voyager. So you're kind of right up, you know, you started with the big five. And publishing is glacial in terms of when books come out compared to how fast we write. And it's just the most bizarre career choice ever. And now we're both writers.
So I know. It's like concentrated madness.
Yeah, we have to cope with all the waiting all at the same time. But it is kind of nice because you know how awful it is. So when I'm going, oh, I can't bear the waiting, you can be sympathetic and vice versa.
It's true. I am once a year or so sympathetic. No, absolutely. It is good to understand. I think, you know, I do consider myself very lucky to be with another writer, actually. Because I imagine if you weren't, if you were with someone who was a normal human being, they might just think, well, they might just despair.
Yeah. I can't imagine being married to someone normal now.
I love it.
And the thing is, when we got married, we were abnormal in a different way, or in a way that is still true, but we were both role players.
Yeah, that's true.
And I can remember saying at the time, God, I can't imagine ever marrying somebody who wasn't a role player, because it was such a massive part of my life.
Yeah.
And now, some years after getting married, we're both writers, and we had no idea that we were both going to be writers. And it's just lucky that we've gone that way.
I'm aware that we've said the word awful a lot relating to writing. And when you were asking earlier about what it's like, the other word I would use to describe it is very. It's very in block capitals.
Yeah.
So when it's awful or stressful or worrying, it is extremely stressful and worrying.
Yeah.
But when it's good, it is also extremely good. It does feel... I think I said not too long ago something like I felt a bit like the Grand Old Duke of York. Because, you know, a bit of good news comes in, or a nice review or a tweet or something, and it's like flying. And then something, either some bad news comes, or you expect something and it doesn't come, or whatever it is. And suddenly it's like being in the pit of despair. Mm. And I've never experienced anything like it before, where I've been so up and down. I mean, it's a bit like, I guess, with a roller coaster, there are kind of good and bad bits of it. But the general thrill is what you kind of come away from. I don't think I'd want to be doing anything else.
I can't imagine us doing anything else. I feel that we're kind of unemployable.
Well, let's hope we never have to imagine doing anything else.
Let's hope so. Yeah, and it's kind of weird thinking about what our life is like, because, you know, every now and again we end up doing the most ridiculous things on stage at conventions, or... Then we're locked away in various, not dungeons, rooms.
Well, I was going to say, this is more you do the ridiculous things on stage at conventions and I get locked up in a dungeon.
No. It's okay. We've corrected the timeline now. So it's all right. Nobody else will know that.
Does that mean it didn't happen? Can I not be upset about this anymore? Is that?
Darling, I'm never going to deny you the opportunity to be upset about something righteously. You're entirely within your rights to be upset about that. But in terms of, you know, everybody else, the timeline we're in now, we've corrected that. So, you know, you've been able to go and do things too.
Is there a timeline where we get rid of the butler?
Well, we can discuss that. You know, we can talk about this.
Good.
Yeah.
I don't think he likes me.
No,
very
I don't
much.
Think he likes you. In fact, one of my lovely friends online, Fred, asked on Twitter what you might have done to upset the butler so much. Do you have any idea what you did?
I mean, the thing is, you know, Fred, I've got no idea. honestly, I've done nothing.
Done anything, have you?
The only thing I remember, he asked me how I was going to take my tea, and I said milk and two sugars.
Oh, dear.
And I don't know, everything just seemed to go downhill after that. But no, I mean, I've not done anything to upset him, really.
Maybe.
Seems a bit strange. And, you know, the more you talk about him, the more I think he's a bit weird. You know, anyone who comes and works for you just because they feel like it and it's quite nice. And what's he doing? I mean, what is he doing now?
Well, I think he's probably dusting. He's always dusting. He seems to enjoy it.
I think your mum would like him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'd probably get along very well, actually. So in the Vagrant, leaping back chaotically to your book.
I'm always happy to leap chaotically back to my book.
You have a couple of characters that people have received very well. One of which is the goat. Someone else online asked if you could explain how you get into the mindset of a cantankerous goat. you're a sterling role player, it has to be said. Was it just like role playing, where you just kind of put your mind, you just imagine that person's life, or that creature's life in the case of the goat, and think about what they would want and feel and take it from there.
I mean, I'd like to say there was some kind of very complicated process.
Be the goat, Peter.
I walked around the room, gradually becoming more and more goat-like and able to write the character.
Wasn't that why you went around headbutting everything for a while?
Yeah. No, that was a completely different issue. No, we don't talk about that.
No.
The thing with the vagrant is certain characters, and of which the goat is one of them, just sort of turned up fully formed. I didn't really have to think very hard about the goat at all. And maybe that says something about my dysfunctional personality. The goat was really easy to write.
I guess the goat is very simple in terms of very basic drives.
Yeah.
There's no kind of complex inner life that has to be addressed or explored.
No, that's right. And also, I think I wanted a kind of foil. You know, there's been this terrible demonic apocalypse, and most of the human characters are struggling in nearly every sense of the word, and it's all very difficult and awful. And the thing about the goat is the goat does not care. Life just goes on. And
kind of similar to the baby in that respect as well, that the baby does not care.
Yes, but whilst you might argue the baby kind of represents hope or is something which has been kind of unsullied by the world, the goat does not really represent hope in any sense.
Like bloody-minded survival, perhaps.
Yes. But the goat does represent the idea that life goes on, for sure. And also, hopefully, occasionally drops in a lighter note.
Oh, definitely.
Into the book as well.
Yeah, definitely. So now that we've corrected the timeline and you've been out for some time now and everything has gone back to normal, we've been able to enjoy some really fantastic stuff on TV lately.
We have.
And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was this very strange experience of watching Spartacus.
Oh, yes.
Which we're very into at the moment.
So I remember lots of people talking about Spartacus when it first came out and saying how amazing it was. And I, to be honest, dismissed it a little bit out of hand. I was a bit like, oh, it just looks like, I don't know, kind of soft porn, really.
It kind of is.
But as in, I dismissed it on that level. That was all it was. So it came on Netflix and we said, okay, we'll sit down and we'll watch it. And what really struck me very quickly was just how brilliant it was on lots of different levels. So yes, okay, it is mainly lots of lovely bodies wandering about. And I'm I can live with that. That's not a hardship. But also the acting is actually very good.
Yeah.
The characterization is very good. The plotting is excellent, and the way it twists and turns and plays with your emotions is really, really superlative. And the other thing we should say about this experience is that we came to it after watching Daredevil, which of course had the same writer. Yeah. And what Spartacus, I think, does brilliantly is surprise in terms of the way the plot goes.
And we think it's going to go one way and then it doesn't. And, and the tension, the way it builds tension both across the whole arc of the series and within each individual episode is really, really impressive.
And also that they're prepared to take risks. They're prepared to kill key characters. And
don't say that, spoilers.
I'm not going to say any which ones. I'm just saying when you watch it, I thought it was going to fall into a predictable kind of model where they would kind of battle each week and blah, 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 and it would sort of just chug along. But it really doesn't. I mean, it really feels like there is an evolution of these characters all the time. I find myself rooting for a character in one episode and hating them in the next, and then rooting for them again two episodes later.
Yeah, and the guy, I wish I could remember the writer's name, but the writer...
Is it Steve DeKnight? Steve?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Something like that.
He's very good at making you root for people who on the surface are evil. Or rather, at face value, they are evil, yet you still root for them.
Yes.
And how the Domina and Dominus are in really hard times at the beginning of the series. And so they are kind of sympathetic. And then it just really messes with your head in the way that Kingpin did, or Fisk, rather, in Daredevil.
Yes.
And, you know, you've lived with me during the Daredevil binge.
That was a beautiful time.
I got so upset.
That was great. See, there's something, a habit of yours we could talk about, but I won't because I love
what's
you.
That?
Well, your love for Kingpin and why it happened.
I'm perfectly happy to discuss why Fisk was amazing and how much I love him.
But yes, this whole thing about characters that are compelling despite being monstrous, which I have to say, I haven't really experienced since I read J.R. Abercrombie's stuff, where there are lots of characters that are pretty horrible, actually, or twisted or wrong, but they're still compelling to read about. I think that's a real art.
I think that was one of the things that I really loved about Fisk, was that he was introduced sympathetically. And it's really interesting looking at the construction where you first meet him when he's trying to just have a date.
I love how awkward even he is. He's just, you know, he, because we often get these very slick villains that are seemingly without flaw in terms of their ability to do things, and everything seems easy, and they're often a bit cold or a bit simplistic,
and they have a lot of majesty.
Yes, whereas I think Fisk, there was a level of humanity to him and awkwardness to him, and that sense that he was always trying really hard not to kill someone.
Yeah,
like, it was a real effort, but he was really dedicated to this idea of not just slamming everyone's heads against walls.
Between other things.
Let's not go back there.
And that's the other thing about Spartacus, isn't it? It's just how bloody gory it is. Oh my God. Sometimes I have to look away. Sometimes you look away.
Yes, there's lots of hiding. But it also the cartoonishness and the kind of almost, it's like gloriously over the top.
I think they've handled that really well, because obviously with a TV show, you don't have the same budget for CGI. Mm. And so they've taken that way that it looks slightly unrealistic and made it stylistically unrealistic, which I'm really impressed by.
And they also have interesting female characters in both series, I think to mention.
Yes. And I love Lucy Lawless.
Lucy Lawless is the best, although I first loved Lucy Lawless in Xena, Warrior Princess.
Yeah, I didn't have a Xena
and
phase.
There is a bit of me that's slightly, you know, I don't think I should have ever seen Xena's boob. So I just, I don't know quite how I feel about it. I'm both sort of delighted and also, I feel naughty. I feel naughty in the wrong way.
Well, was it the other night? I had to get you to rewind a bit of Spartacus because I was so distracted by her breasts.
Yeah, you said, sorry, what happened in that scene? I was busy looking at Lucy Lawless's boobs,
they're,
I think
really
was your
beautiful.
Exact line. Yeah, no, they're great. They're great.
They are. And that's the thing about Spartacus is there is so much nudity, but something I love about it is that it isn't all bloody male gaze.
Yes.
The men are just as sexually objectified as the women are, perhaps even more so.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that actually we are just being kind of globally tricked into watching really fantastic porn for women. That's what I think.
Is that what Spartacus is?
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's porn for women through the back door. I think actually Spartacus is kind of like porn for everyone.
Yeah,
everyone! It's inclusive porn. It's, you know...
I guess so. It is, yeah, it is for everybody. But it's also what I would think, if I was going to get a ton of money and make porn for women, that it satisfies so many of the criteria that I think...
Hang on, I'll just get my notebook.
Actually, maybe we shouldn't be talking about this.
It's a bit saucy, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's just intelligent and, you know, thoughtful, and it explores kind of power relationships in a really interesting way from both viewpoints of the sexes, you know, politically and sexually, and I think that's really lovely. But the costumes are just absolutely batshit mental. Sometimes I'm watching and thinking, what are their bones? They said boning in that dress. What's going on?
They're certainly boning somewhere. I often think to myself, are there costumes in Spartacus? I think actually, I wonder if what happened was they had a very small costume budget. So they just said, okay, we can give this little flimsy bit of fabric to each character.
No, they did this flimsy little bit of fabric to all the beautiful men. They're like, yes, well done. I applaud that costume decision.
I'm afraid our costuming budget has gone on oil.
Yes.
To be smeared over all of the characters.
Oiled, beautiful men everywhere. It's really fantastic. It's a very odd show.
I went in there with a lot of preconceptions and I was expecting to dismiss it, and I found myself very, very quickly drawn in.
Mm.
I don't think it's deep, but I think it is extremely well constructed and extremely well told.
Yeah, when you look
well
at it.
Acted.
And that's something that is perhaps a disadvantage of two writers living together, is that everything we watch and everything we read, we critically analyze until it is no longer possible to consume anything in a normal way anymore. And that's one of the nice things about Spartacus, is that it is enjoyable on a very shallow level, like ooh, look at the lovely people, right through to, well, that was constructed so cleverly to lead us to believe, you know, this certain thing, and then it twists and then twists again and twists again, all in one episode. And that's really cool in terms of craft.
I mean, totally hats off to the writer.
Yes.
Spartacus, and of course Daredevil as well.
Mm.
We salute you.
Daredevil. So do you think it's a disadvantage living with a writer? Because it's kind of got to the point where we can't consume anything normally anymore. We have to analyse everything.
Well, not really. I think any writer or person that analyses any kind of craft like that is going to do that on their own anyway. You get to a point where you start to look at things differently, I think. Maybe we enhance that effect a bit.
Yeah, whether we're kind of like an echo chamber.
There might be a bit of that. It certainly means there are a lot of shows now that I can't enjoy.
Mm.
And there are kind of lazy things that are sometimes done that annoy me a lot more than they ever used to.
Mm.
I probably just wasn't as tuned into them as before. But having said that, when something really good comes out, I think I appreciate it more. So there is a flip side.
I think also we are proper geeks. So when we really, really do love something, we will joyously talk about it and dissect it and debate aspects of it for a long time.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's just kind of, you know, the people we are. Something that I feel I should ask you,
yeah,
seeing as we are having a nice cup of tea together,
yes,
in good company,
yes,
is about a theme tune for your life, because I'm quite interested to find out which one you would actually pick, because there are so many you sing all the time.
Oh, yes.
So I was wondering, if you had a theme tune for your life, what would it be and why?
Well, that is a really good question. And I guess the quick answer is I don't have kind of one theme tune.
You have a whole jukebox.
Yeah. So I very quickly came down to, what songs do I think are cool? And I assume you're asking this question because of these chickens, which I really need to talk to you about where we got these chickens from at some point. But I guess
they were a gift. I didn't.
A gift? Who gave you them?
I don't know. It just said from a secret admirer.
You've got a secret admirer.
I do. Isn't it exciting?
Yeah. Great. Oh, great. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Nothing creepy there. Okay. Good. Well. Anyway. In terms of. So I had various ideas, and I generally came down to what would I think would be cool. And obviously, Mike Cole has already got the Imperial March.
I know, isn't that just the best choice ever?
But I also thought about things like the Terminator 2 soundtrack. It would be amazing, sung by chickens. And also in Holst the Planets, Mars. I'd really like to hear chickens sing that. But really, what I narrowed it down to very quickly was Thundercats or He-Man. It all comes down to Thundercats or He-Man.
Well, that you could say that life comes
life,
down to
life. Yes, the quintessential question. But then, of course, I had this other, I had like an epiphany. And in some ways it's perfect for me because it's someone who, if I was to ever become a pop star, I would dance like them.
Okay.
Because they dance in the same way. But also, I'm very loyal. And I think that the song of theirs that always sticks with me is about kind of loyalty and commitment.
Yeah, you are very loyal, yeah.
So the song that I would choose is...
Hang on a minute.
What?
A minute. This is not a song that happened to come out around the 80s or early
90s, naturally,
perhaps.
Naturally.
And this wouldn't be, oh, you're going to Rickroll the chickens, aren't you?
Well, I was going to...
No. I'm putting my foot down. The foot is going down.
No, come on.
No. The foot is going
come
down.
Come on, who can object to a little bit of Rick?
No. I can object to a little bit of Rick. I'm very happy to do that.
Hang on, are you vetoing my
I
chicken
am.
Choice? What?
But, you know, because we're married, I feel like I am.
Fine. Well, if you're not going to let me have a certain song about people never being...
No, don't even say the title, because then they'll sing it.
I would have to go back to my eternal question of He-Man or Thundercats. Can I have both?
No, you can only have one.
If I go for just musical strength alone, I'd have to go for Thundercats.
Little chickens, please could you sing the original Thundercats theme tune? There you go, darling.
That is actually really cool.
I'm just going to check the teapot. Oh, and I'm afraid the teapot's empty.
Oh.
But, you know, we can have another cup of tea very soon.
I guess we can, can't we?
So I wanted to just apologise again for the mix-up over the cellar, but we've put that all right now.
Yeah.
And I think we should move the game consoles upstairs so that that can't ever happen again.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good.
By accident.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'll get Latimer to move them. And
Yeah, actually, next time you talk to him, could you ask him what he's done with the rest of my clothes? Well, I can't seem to find the wardrobe with my clothes in it anywhere.
Oh, well, we did move some things around a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you're normally the one that finds everything in the house. But I can find my own wardrobe, but it just seems to have gone. And there seems to be a new hallway I don't remember.
Oh,
and about seven new rooms.
Yeah. And there's another hallway that's only there on Tuesdays. I don't know why. But I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah.
Don't look so worried.
Well, it is worrying.
And I was just wondering if you could pop out and get us some milk.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, love. All right, well, I will see you later then. And you have to go back over the drawbridge, you know, with the new moat.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I'll be all right, will I?
You'll be fine.
Lava won't melt the drawbridge.
No, just stay on the drawbridge, and then when you go through the garden, you must stay on the path.
The path?
Yeah, the path. It's really clear. It's really clear. I know it sounds like something out of a fairy tale, but just stay on the path.
A kind of sinister fairy tale that I'm living in. But no. Yeah.
Our life is a sinister fairy tale. Did you not realise?
I'm beginning to get that. Yeah, it's sinking in. Okay.
But it's not actually anything sinister. It's just because we're, you know, landscaping parts of the garden and some bits are really muddy and some bits aren't particularly safe. There's like rocks and things. You know.
All right, good. Well, on that note, I suppose I should go and get the milk.
Okay then, darling.
Quest for the milk.
It is a noble quest. Because without it, we can't have tea this afternoon.
That's true.
Thank you, darling, and I'll see you later.
All right, bye.
Bye. Ah, there you are, Latimer. Where were you?
Attending to my duties, ma'am. Dusting and so forth.
I thought as much. Has Peter reached the end of the garden yet?
Almost, ma'am. He appears to be distracted by something.
Ooh, is that potted steak and bacon with Yorkshire puddings?
Oh no, he's leaving the path. What's that picnic blanket doing in the middle of the lawn?
It's to cover over our new sarlacc, ma'am.
Is that why you were digging that hole the other day? I thought it was for an ornamental fish pond.
No, ma'am. I believe the piranha will prefer it on the shadier side of the house.
Piranha? What are you talking about? I wanted koi carp.
I'm afraid the piranha ate them, ma'am.
But hang on. Does that mean that that plate has just been precariously balanced over the pit containing the new sarlacc?
It appears so, ma'am. And most unfortunate that such a tempting dish has been left to lure the unwary. Still, I'm sure your husband, renowned for his iron will have no trouble resisting such temptations. After all, you gave him very specific instructions.
Oh, no. Pete! Stay on the path!
Sorry, love, I can't hear you.
Stay on the path!
Hang on, love. I'm just going to grab this Yorkshire and I'll be right back!
Oh, no!
Don't worry, ma'am. He's clinging to the side in a most manly fashion.
The sarlacc has got his ankle with one of its tentacles. And by the time I get there, it will have eaten him.
Celebratory cake, ma'am?
Latimer! Oh, wait. He's drawing his magic sword and holding it aloft. I thought that was just a LARP weapon. I'm not sure this is going to go very well.
It is rather small.
By the power of Grayskull, I have the power!
Oh, he did get both in the end. Oh, he's actually transforming.
Not exactly what I would call a transformation, ma'am. His hair has changed colour, and he's gained a suntan, and lost quite a few of his clothes. Apart from that, he appears exactly the same.
If anything, the sarlacc seems even more keen to eat him. My, is that Battle Cat?
Sadly not, ma'am. I believe it is one of the lions that has taken to travelling with Miss Muttons.
It's pulling him out of the pit. Oh, thank goodness for that.
Indeed, ma'am. But he isn't safe yet. The lion looks very unhappy about something.
It's giving him a makeover. Oh yes, I do approve of that scarf. Very fetching. Well, if there's one thing you can say about Juliet Muttons, she certainly looks after her clients.
Actually, ma'am, I have a few other things one could say about her.
Not now, Latimer.
Very good, ma'am.
Well, while the lion finishes getting Pete ready for his next author event,
I'd like to raise my teacup to Adrian and Chris, the newest members of the Order of the Sacred Teacup. Should you wish to join the esteemed order and discover how Latimer became my butler, go to www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy.
A letter arrived for you while you were taking tea, Mum.
Ooh, sealed with wax. How exciting. I have discovered the finest dessert known to humanity. It is served at a restaurant in New York. I would value your opinion on its qualities. Please find enclosed flights to New York, a hotel arranged for your convenience, and a map to the restaurant in question. Your secret admirer. Ooh, how exciting! I've always wanted to go to New York.
I would advise against it, Mum. It's clearly a trick. Everyone knows that the finest dessert known to humanity is in fact served in Chipping Bottom, Somerset, on the fifth Thursday of months ending in the letter Y.
Oh, nonsense, Latimer. It's very exciting and I won't have you spoil it for me. Find us a new location for the tea there, would you? Preferably somewhere in New York.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.